Carmel, California. It's tape number 385, April the 20th, 1979, and this is side one of this tape. Tape number 385, this tape, and probably 386 next week, will be a two-part cassette. As I do sometimes when I run a series, because I don't know if I'll be able to cover in 1 hour the amount of material that I want to get in on this tape today. So this will be the first of a two-part tape, because I'm going to deal extensively with a subject, two subjects, that I've been following for a while. One, the John Kennedy assassination, which I've been studying for 15 years, and the other is Jonestown. And I want to talk about the common denominators, some stories that may be possible to link together, the cause and the meaning of Jonestown and how it relates to the John Kennedy assassination. That's a big job, but pieces of the puzzle are coming together, and I want to go over it very slowly with you and see if we can grasp the interconnecting links and make some sense of these phenomena. Before I do that, I want to mention that not next week, but the week after, May 4th, 5th, and 6th, up at Davis, University of California campus at Davis. It's just about 20 miles from Sacramento. There's going to be their 10th annual Festival of Mind, Body, and Spirit, they call it. It's an ecological affair that they have. It's the 10th year. I attended one of these similar 2 years ago at Cal State in Sacramento. But this is at Davis, and they've invited me to speak there and to be included among the various persons. It's a group of people interested in art and in health and ecology and spirituality and human potential and in the environment. And it's a very energizing, it's a good experience to be among these young people and some older ones, too, who are into preserving things that we have on planet Earth, taking care of the quality of life and taking greater responsibility in their own hands for their own health and their minds. I'll be speaking there at the main auditorium at around 7 in the evening. And then there'll be a research group, a seminar, an hour later. I think I'm going up for the whole 3 days to mingle and be with the people and hear the other speakers, and they'll have musicians and bands and so forth. And if any of you in the Bay Area who take the tapes want to meet me there, you can phone me or write, better just phone, and I'll get more information about where we could meet. There will be a discussion group afterwards, so you could meet me Saturday afternoon somewhere around 5 or 6 o'clock, and as I say, I'll be speaking Saturday evening from around 7 to 8, I think, as the schedule, and or 6 to 7. It isn't firmly set, but I will be there at the main auditorium, as lecture forum, and then agreed to have a seminar for people who want questions later. So that'll be a more personal thing, and many of you may want to meet and get together, and it's a really good festival, and we can have a lot of fun, and it's a place to answer your questions if you have a lot of them, and to get a nice weekend out of it if you want it. And it'll be early enough if you have to get back to San Francisco or to other cities on the peninsula or up north. There are many people who do take these tapes who have been wanting to meet, and I never have enough time when I get in that direction. So if you want to do it, this is a place where we could be. It'll be at Davis, and I'll be up there the whole weekend, but specifically Saturday afternoon and the evening, the early evening. The subject that they want me to talk about, the theme that they have for the three-day conference, is called Tools of Transformation. And of course, with my research, in the area that I'm particularly interested in is the moral and ethical purposes for which to make life better. If you don't have that reason, if you don't have that philosophy, then all the research in the world doesn't make any difference. So I'll be going into areas such as affection and attentiveness, or principles, loyalty, life purposes, and kindness, and courtesy, and gratitude, and humility, and honesty, and individuality, and justice, and even refinement and patriotism. There's a lot of tools to make life better, and they apply to researchers. Many of the researchers don't have those tools, unfortunately. They're pretty blunt, and I think that's one reason they don't get as far as they should with the amount of information they have. And some of them are pretty nice, and some are very, very nice. But there has to be a certain self-control, a self-direction, a respect for the law, a thoroughness, and a trust, even with all the things that are going on, and a sense of duty. And I will talk about some of these things that I think are important as we search for assassins and conspirators and people that continuously murder and pillage individuals and the planet Earth. We also have to have a sense of orderliness and tidiness and respect for people. And I think the work will become monumental and effective if we combine these tools that we have. And of course, I'll be going into the tools that they want to talk about of transformation, which I believe are value systems, then education, more formal education, the use of communication, language, radio and newspapers, and tape cassettes, of course. The tools of transformation, I believe, are individual, refining your own individual traits while you refine the world, and combining them, combining your information and your lifestyle, so that you build a very solid rock that is a foundation for other people to emulate and to observe, and to see that it works, that you can be very calm and idealistic and practical and realize your sense of duty and your culture and develop friendships and have a strong foundation, which I have tried to do, and this is what I'll be going into at Davis. And for those of you who can't attend, in a gist, that's how I feel about the research, the tools of transformation to make changes in this world, if they are possible, come through a combination of value systems plus a lot of hard work that is motivated by those value systems, and using your books, radio, television, tape cassettes, your fountain pen, your eyes, your ears, whatever you've got, to pass along the information and give it to the next generation to use. And hopefully it will be solid enough that they'll learn to live by it. Two adopted sons of Jim Jones. One is 20 years old, Timothy Glenn, and the other is 18 years old, Jim Jones Jr., he's 18, have asked for immunity before the federal grand jury on an investigation in San Francisco about the murder of Congressman Leo Ryan. And Judge Robert Peckham was told that the Joneses had refused to answer questions before the grand jury. The assistant U.S. attorney, his name is Donald Ayer, asked that they be ordered to answer these questions, and then he said that the investigation may take twists and turns which we may not have foreseen. He replied, there is nothing to contradict the claims of innocence of these men, but the U.S. attorney, Ayer, went on to say that the investigation will be going for 2 months into Ryan's killing, but that it is not to say the focus may change in the future. How far the San Francisco courts will go into the investigation of Jonestown is an open question. I don't believe that they can go very far, because the whole San Francisco political structure and the federal government is involved in Jonestown. There's a cemetery in Marin County that was to receive some of the bodies, the 547 that are still not buried after 5 months. And that cemetery was desecrated this week with spray cans and signs that Jonestown doesn't belong here. 366 of the 913 have been buried. 234 are still not identified. Of the 234 not identified, 199 are children. 35 adults are unidentified, even though there were passports at Jonestown for each person, and by the process of elimination, if you take 913 and you can identify a great number, 366 have been buried by relatives. It seems to me that when you get down to that number and you have passports for each person, that they could be identified by the passports. But of course, we were told that the names were changed and that some of the people weren't the same as on the passports. There was one news comment that the people's names might not match the passports, which is still one of the open questions. And before I get into the subject of Jonestown and the Kennedy assassination, I must remind you and review again that the various survivors said that there were 1,200 members or 1,100 members, depending on which lawyer or which persons are speaking, but the figure is never less than that. And there were 913 slain. So taking the lowest number, 1,100 members, that would mean 187 left from that, which is 80 survivors that are still around and 107 missing. And it's that 107 that are missing with the question mark that I want to keep open in pertaining to the subject I'm going to be talking about on the case this week and next week. As I say, there's 234 unidentified and 199 were children. So that actually that makes over 330 that were not identified, because 107 are missing and the 234 are unidentified. So there's no way of knowing who was buried and who was shot or poisoned and who got away. Oh, one other point in the news before I get into Jonestown. The last thing I do want to bring up, and there was a lot of news I did want to get into this week. Most of you, I'm sure, saw the article in Thursday's paper that the FBI is not going to investigate the murder of CIA officer John Paisley, that the Senate Intelligence Committee in Congress wanted them to go into the mysterious circumstances of Paisley's death, and the FBI decided that they wouldn't go into it, whether he was a Soviet agent for the KGB or whether it was a suicide, whether he was the victim of KGB assassin or a suicide, or whether or not it was John Paisley. Doesn't seem to interest the FBI. Now that's interesting, with their notorious anti-communist stance all these years, that they would be so casual about John Paisley. For those of you who don't have the tapes that I did on Paisley, you can order those back tapes, or you can write to Penn Jones Jr. and get the article I did on John Paisley for his continuing inquiry. The article in the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday referred to John Paisley's working with the CIA in 1974, being called back in 76 as a coordinator of their A team and their B team. And it's those words that I think that are interesting in lieu of the article that I want to go into with you at length now and for the remainder of this tape. The Counterspy magazine issued an article in December 1978 of this year that it was put together before, keep in mind, before Jonestown. Jonestown took place the end of November, November 19th, up through the entire weeks of November and December, the Jonestown story was breaking. And these magazines usually date ahead, or certainly it takes months ahead of writing, 3 months ahead. So that the article that was written by Conrad Ege, E-G-E, for Counterspy, and I'm giving you the address for you to order it and own it, was printed just at the time that prior to the story when Leo Ryan was coming down to Jonestown before the Jonestown death of 913 people. Now this story is about a place in Chile called Colonia Dignidad. I'm giving you the address and the spelling of the tape. And I'm going to jump around with the article because in my usual style, I read the article. It's a seven or eight page story for Counterspy. And I retyped it into about 20 or 30 pages and outlined it every point. And I want to go down the line with you on this story because even though it was only eight pages and it's about a religious Christian cult in Chile, as I went through the article and had to retype it, I noticed 67 parallels to Jonestown in a 7 or 8 page article. 67 parallels to Jonestown, and I see the overlink and the overlaying layers of this German cult to what was going on in Jonestown. Now, the name of the cult in Chile is called Colonia Dignidad. It is a place, an orphanage. It is a place where children were brought, a Christian sect from Germany to Chile, similar to the Christian sect that was brought from San Francisco and Redwood Valley down to Guyana. And the time levels overlay pretty close to the arrangements of the German movement and the California-Guyana movement. The camp is an isolated place like Jonestown, and the author of this article made some comments about it. The Colonial Dignidad is a sequence of fascism, of good Nazi fascism that moved from Germany to Chile. And of course, I believe that Jonestown is a fascism that moved from Germany to the United States to Guyana. The author asked that the Western world don't separate themselves from the torture that goes there and the repressions going on in Chile, because America, the United States Army, specifically made it possible for the military junta in Chile to come to power, to put the Nazis into power, and as soon as they were in, they were displaying their swastikas on the streets of Chile. Henry Kissinger and ITT and Volkswagen and Kennecott Copper, and of course Kissinger being the spokesman for the Nelson Rockefeller Chase Manhattan Council of Foreign Relations gang. This author blames the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the U.S. banks, and European money for making this fascism possible. And he asked the question, where is democracy, or what is democracy? And the question he asked in this article is what I've asked for many, many years, ever since I began my work on the John Kennedy assassination and saw that Lee Harvey Oswald's closest friends, 20 or 30 of them, were part of the Nazi Galen operation, and his closest friend was a Nazi spy during World War II and had been groomed by the Nazis, a czarist, George Morenchil. The author asks in this article on Colonial Dignidad, what is the United States doing, or what is West Germany doing? Do we use a front by calling ourselves democracies, which simply consists of making profits from fascism all around the world? Now, we've done this in South Korea, the Philippines, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay, Chile, South Africa. What we call democracy here is an exchange of repressions and fascisms everywhere. In other words, our financial success borders on the fact that we have the illusion of democracy on the surface while we're putting fascism and military juntas into power all over the world. And the question is asked in the article, well, how long will Western corporations and bankers profit? Is profit always the primary motivation force in a democratic structure? Is democracy what we should be working for, or is totalitarianism really the maximum profits and the front of the elections is the cover for the democracy? The author, Conrad Eeg, is asking the questions that I've wanted to ask and have asked over and over again ever since World War II was over: how we put the Nazis in power in Greece, how we overthrew 77 countries and put in military dictatorships, calling ourselves a democracy, ruling out people like Andreas Papandreou in Greece, who obviously isn't a communist, admitting, just recently there were articles, a long article in the Los Angeles Times, admitting that Mossadegh was not a communist, that he was not a threat in Iran when the CIA overthrew that government and put in the Shah, that it was the oil they wanted, simply the oil in Iran, and that was the excuse for the Savak, for the tortures. The profit system was the motivation, not that Russia would take over Iran, or that even later that Mao Tse-tung or Chu Enlai or these various persons that we accused of being strong communists, they weren't communists. It was the profits for the drugs, for the oil, for making war. And there's a long exposure, as I said just recently, on Mossadegh, his politics, and we know also in Greece that the motivating factor in turning fascism is just pure profit for a few corporations and keep the rest of the people literally slaves and not killing them off. Now, before I go into the 67 comparisons to this operation down there in Chile called the Colonial Dignidad, I like to start at the end. I'd like to tell you the conclusions of the article and then go back to the beginning. I do this when I read a book or even when I see a movie. I like to know the end, the punchline, and then see how it reconstructs. I just happen to be that way. So I'm going to blow the finale of this article for you and then start at the beginning with you. The finale is that the repressions that were taking place in this colony, and remember when Jim Jones says, die with dignity, die with dignity, dignidad, colonia dignidad. This was an orphanage started by Christians, sent by the West German government to Chile, where the Nazis had settled after World War II, and the cover was an orphanage, and they separated children from their parents, and they only spoke German there. They didn't teach them the Spanish language, and they had an agricultural farm and a cattle farm, self-sustaining agricultural area, which was perfect for nurturing and hiding fascism. But the front for this farm was actually the headquarters for the Fourth Reich and the Nazi Germans that used the farm. And along the farm, underneath the ground, away from the children and the orphanage and the agricultural commune, were places and passageways where people from DINA, which is D-I-N-A, which is the Chilean police, put in by the CIA, like the SAVAK was put in by the CIA in Iran. The Chilean police use it for torture and interrogations, and they take persons, and many of them have died, a few have escaped. They talked about the tortures, and they were taken to this colony, and the people living there at the colony can't hear them. They're taken first with hoods over their face with grease underneath the hoods, chemicals that stick to their face and wet towels in their mouth, and then they strap them naked to beds and use electrodes and tortures and have dogs sexually assaulting them and chewing out their genitals, eating and chewing their genitals and maiming them and hanging them and choking them and tape recording their tortures, and many died, some escaped. It's on the grounds of the Nazi headquarters, and when Amnesty International began to investigate and write articles about this great colony, the German press suppressed it like they're doing the Jonestown stories. The German courts suppressed it. They didn't deny the charges, but they suppressed it. And the author says that the reason it was suppressed in Germany and the reason the United Nations ignored the complaints about what was going on at Colonia Dignidad was because it was much larger than on the surface. It wasn't just a place like the Shah of Iran's torture center, the House of the Savak. It's linked to South Africa and West Germany, and the CIA, the common denominator of all this, is South Africa and West Germany and the Central Intelligence Agency, because the CIA put in the West German government with Reinhard Gehlen and Hitler's agents, and the CIA put in Pinochet and the Chilean government. And they also approve and finance and work with the South African racism and Nazis and have a triangle of weapon supplies and money and funding going between these three headquarters of South Africa, West Germany, and Chile, and also the role of the United States. The West German government has supported Colonial Dignidad. The West German government would not antagonize the Chile junta that was put in by the CIA. And as I say, these large corporations have been behind the flow of profits to themselves that kept slave labor and keep slave labor going. And that's why the torture, to keep the labor movements and the oppressed from organizing, they are killing and torturing all those people that speak up in order to keep the life expectancy down, the wages down. Comparison 66, starting backwards and then going forward, was that the United States wanted bauxite and the minerals from Guyana and wants to develop Guyana. It isn't a socialist country. It was put in by the Central Intelligence Agency, too. Another comparison between Jonestown and Guyana and Chile was that the CIA put in both governments and overthrew the existing electoral system and chose the people that they want to run it. The CIA put in the Guyanese government and the premier there, and also wants the bauxite and the minerals, the Mellon family and Mellon interests, and many of the United States financiers have interest in Guyana, as well as the CIA station in Matthews Ridge that was very much a part of this whole operation. The author of this article says, Colonia Dignitas is a link to a complex network. The West German ambassador to Chile, his name is Eric Straitling, I'll give you his name and spelling on the sheet that's enclosed here, was formerly the West German ambassador to South Africa. He was sent from South Africa to Chile to strengthen the links of West Germany and South Africa and Chile. As I say, there's this triangle. Now, they work closely with SATO, South Atlantic Treaty Organization, which is a sister of NATO, and that recently was exposed as having one of its leaders a former Nazi. And one of Henry Kissinger's plans, one of his original plans, was to form SATO, South Atlantic Treaty Organization, to, in quotes, stem the tide of destabilization in South Africa and in Latin America. Now, I've said all along that Henry Kissinger was not and never has been Jewish, that he was a Nazi plant and took on the cover of being Jewish, of his family being Jewish, and that he's worked with Nazis from Germany and Rockefeller and Trilateral, the Bilderbergers, and Prince Bernhard, and the world's worst Nazis. And it was Henry Kissinger, handpicked by Standard Oil, when he came to this country and plunked to Harvard, and he was in military intelligence and sent back to Germany. Kissinger, at the time of Watergate, you remember, worked with ITT and Richard Nixon and helped overthrow Allende and set up the coup there, set up Politico, the game plans for overthrowing Chile. Henry Kissinger set up SATO, the South Atlantic Treaty Organization, and the links of South Africa down to Chile. Chile gets 40% of its arms from South Africa. Bonn, Germany sends them to Africa. They can send them to Africa, and Africa sends them to Chile. There's a love affair between West Germany, the United States, South Africa, and Chile. And these links, as I say, were set up by Henry Kissinger. Now, a parallel to Jonestown, the Henry Kissinger connections to Rockefeller are important because if Chile and Argentina are next to each other and this farm, this work farm, this torture center, Colonial Dignitas, borders right next to Argentina so that, A, no one can escape. If they run over, they'll be returned by the Argentine Nazi police. Or B, if somebody comes to Colonial Dignitas and catches on, they can flee to Argentina and hide. And that's what happened with the Venezuela property when Jonestown was rented in Guyana. The conditions were at Matthews Ridge, where they went to see the property, and Jim Jones was there in 63 and knew the terrain and would be returning later in 73. The conditions were that they could walk to Venezuela to escape, and it also be that they could go to Venezuela and hide if somebody came, as they did to Jonestown. The boats are missing. Jim Jones' boats are missing. The people that set up Jonestown are missing. Venezuelan banks had Jim Jones' money in them, and that's been hushed up since the exposure of the $26 million that was left in these international banks. Rockefeller's oil, the Panapec oil, comes from Venezuela. Nelson Rockefeller, the man who moved Henry Kissinger around as his puppet, has a large farm in Venezuela that borders to this setup identical. The Venezuela connections to Jonestown and Guyana are identical to the Chile connections to Argentina, where you have repressive centers for experimentation on people, and that's what this Colonial Dignitas was, experimenting on pressures of torture and how much people can take, and experiment on interrogation and the use of drugs if people want to flee that particular place, Colonial Dignitas, or if they wanted to flee out of Chile, they were given drugs, and this was identical to Jonestown. Well, the borders of Jonestown and Guyana are to Venezuela what the borders of the Chilean orphanage, religious camp for orphanage, was to Argentina, and I believe they were run for the same purpose. as I say, weapons for Chile and the military dictatorship come from South Africa, Great Britain, Israel, and West Germany. Fritz Bollmuller, a German-Chilean contact, has close ties with Chile and Germany, has pointed out the transfer of weapons from Chile to Chile from Bonn Embassy in Germany. Now, the West German ties to Chile have to do with uranium. The West German ties to South Africa both have to do with uranium. And this is important in atomic age, too, where they both are building up the capability for atomic bombs. All the fuss last week about the ambassador's plane flying over South Africa and photographing had to do with atomic bombs and facilities there in South Africa. Not to get too far afield, you know, several tapes ago I talked about South African money going to Miss Thatcher and the elections in England. The Evening News 2 days ago said that part of the campaign of the extreme rightists in England will be to deport 3.2 million blacks that are living in England if the right wing that has many, many candidates running for election in May wins. One of the goals is to deport the blacks out of England and build up the British Empire again. That's a stated goal. And the money for that has been coming from this $87 million fund in South Africa that is still undisclosed, but some of it went to Miss Thatcher and the far-right party. On side two now, we'll do more about Colonia Dignidad.